Francis Albert Sinatra was born in Hoboken, New Jersey, on December 12, 1915. He was the only child of Martin and Natalie Sinatra.
During his birth, Francis Albert Sinatra was almost ruled dead on arrival. Born on December 12, 1915, in the kitchen of his parents' New Jersey apartment, Sinatra weighed 13.5 pounds at birth and had to be removed from the womb with forceps. Frank was originally thought to be stillborn, as he was blue and not breathing. While the doctor was treating his mother, Frank's grandmother took the seemingly dead infant, ran him under cold water, and slapped him on the back, which suddenly revived him. The forceps used during Frank's birth left him with a facial scarring on the left side of his face, neck, and jawline. This led him to receive the punishing nickname of Scarface from his peers in adolescence. During his singing career, Frank would endeavor to hide his facial imperfections with heavy makeup.
He lived in a predominantly Italian-American working-class neighborhood. As a student at Demarest High School, he became popular by exhibiting the traits he would carry with him throughout his lifetime, those of a generous but pugnacious individual.
The father, Antonio Martino Sinatra, was native from Sicily and balanced his work between his own tavern and with boxing. The mother, Natalia Garaventa, was born on Genoa. She was representative of the Democratic Party and had been in jail for carrying out abortions. Dolly, as people called her, made sure that her son was uomini rispettati, that is, a respected man. With these examples, young Frank displayed a strong character. He hated school and even joined a gang, which brought him problems with the police. Nonetheless, he never immersed himself in delinquency. When he was 10 years old, he was already singing in his father's tavern.
Earlier in his life, Sinatra knew he wanted to become a singer. His influences were Rudy Valli and his idol, Bing Crosby. After dropping out of high school, he began to sing at obscure clubs.
In 1932, he met Nancy Barbato. They got married 6 years later and had three children. But there was another detail. Barbato was related to Babe Gavaranti, one of the henchmen of Guarino Willie Moretti. Back then, Moretti was the boss of the office, the name given to New Jersey's mafia. It wasn't long after that Sinatra and Moretti met and became friends. As a result, Willie promised to help him with his musical career, but in exchange for some favors.
He got his first big break with Major Bowes and his Amateur Hour in 1935. Singing in a group called the Hoboken Four, Sinatra, by preference, continued to sing in various New Jersey nightclubs, hoping to attract the attention of the band leaders who led America into the swing era on the many hundreds of radio stations that were popping up all over the country.
The untouchable team of Jerome Kern and Oscar Hammerstein. I do hope you enjoy the song as you.
From the Rustic Cabin Club in Alpine, New Jersey, Sinatra got his first radio play in 1939 on station WNEW in New York City.
I hear music. Beautiful theme of every dream I ever knew.
He then signed with his first bandleader, Harry James, for $75 per week. That same year, he married his longtime sweetheart, Nancy Barbato. They would eventually have three children.
Then melt away. I hear music when I touch your hand.
After 7 months with Harry James, Sinatra joined Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra, causing his career to skyrocket. Dorsey's orchestra was one of the most popular in the land and remained so with Sinatra singing. From 1940 through 1942, during that time, he performed with the band in his first two movies, Las Vegas Nights, 1941, and Ship Ahoy, 1942.
Pianist Chico Schimone has disclosed for the first time that the mob gave Sinatra a secret audition. It was organized by cronies of Lucky Luciano.
Bet Luciano. We had lunch together, but this particular...
He came to know Luciano and was trusted to say nothing about the powerful men who would attend.
And next to me, there's Lucky. On my right is Lucky.
The details, he says, were in the hands of Luciano's murderous lieutenant, Frank Costello.
There was somebody that was bringing a young boy that had a good voice. And he had some friends coming over to listen to this boy sing.
The friends were other mobsters.
So I played for him, and he sang.
Sinatra, he says, was confident. The mobsters were impressed.
He wasn't panicky or something like that. Sang a beautiful song, night and day. Not a giorno.
I think of you day and night, night and day. Why is it so?
Schimone has chosen not to tell his story before.
Never I'll talk. Never. Always. My mouth shut.
Sinatra began his solo career at the end of 1942 and continued his meteoric rise. River,
he must know something, but he don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling.
The vibrations in the air, the sound, was awesome and frightening.
This was how it began for Frank Sinatra, a man who was to become a legend in his time.
Really, to me, terrifying, because it was inhuman almost. It was, you know, out of the range of anything I'd ever heard before.
I hear music when I look at you.
And I never saw anybody reach and hold an audience the way Frank did.
Down deep in my heart.
Magic.
Exempted from military service in World War II because of a punctured eardrum, Sinatra fought his war from Hollywood. By the end of the war, he was a screen idol.
When our love was
powerful, powerful magic.
His wife, Nancy, was expected to stay home and bear children.
When you have the access to beautiful women, they couldn't resist him. She knew that.
The power.
The power, because of his friends, that would help him, you know.
More powerful friends came to Sinatra's aid later when he wanted to wriggle out of a contract with bandleader Tommy Dorsey. Dorsey complained that two armed men had come to see him.
So they said, well, I tell you, it caused a little problem because we really need him. And I know you wouldn't want to be dead and not have a contract. So why don't we just now make a good deal?
Did they show their weapons?
Yes, they did. Yes. They all have to do is put their coat back and there's the butt of the gun.
So Dorsey was afraid?
Oh, yeah. He said there was nothing in the world I was going to do then.
My funny Valentine, sweet comic Valentine, you make me smile.
As the leading American singer through the war era, he epitomized the evolution of American music with blends of music that included jazz and the classics. the idiom would come to be known simply as American popular music or pop music. The swing era lasted from 1935 through the end of World War II, and Sinatra was by far its best-known vocalist. His musical roots and education were that of the Tin Pan Alley tradition, but he was a diligent student of Italian opera as well. Most important to him throughout his career would be his insistence in his own style and arrangements for whatever music he sang. His unique phrasing of lyrics and his jazzy syncopation of melody lines were delivered in a voice best described as light baritone, with a sharp New York accent, resonating deep into his nasal cavities to produce the classic crooning effect.
Valentine's Day is your figure less than Greek? Is your mind?
His wide-shouldered suits and his bow ties were imitated by many men, but his most ardent followers were the teenaged girls, nicknamed the Bobby Soxers, who swooned or screamed for Frankie when he sang. For the croon prince of swing, his widespread appeal was further fueled by America's explosive mass media growth in newspapers, magazines, films, record players, and radio stations. Sinatra was the first to attract the kind of near hysteria that would later accompany live appearances by Elvis Presley and the Beatles. This type of excitement reached its peak in the famed Columbus Day riot of October 12, 1944, when thousands of his fans, mostly female, denied entry into the already packed Paramount Theater in New York City, stormed the streets, and vented their frustration by smashing nearby shop windows.
Frank even met his idol briefly in 1935 at a Newark club, but they wouldn't meet again for nearly a decade when Frank was a huge star in his own right. By the time the 1940s rolled around, Crosby was still popular, but Sinatra's fame was skyrocketing. Bing had fans, but he was never greeted by the hordes of screaming, swooning teenage Bobby Soxer girls that made up Sinatra's fan base. Crosby took Frank's rising popularity in stride, however, once saying that Sinatra was a singer that comes around once in a lifetime, and jokingly added, "But why did it have to be my lifetime?" After that, a media-driven rivalry was born. The two competing crooners would frequently trade barbs and insults at each other on public radio broadcasts. The rivalry was played up for media attention, but it was never really serious. Later, they would perform duets together and co-star in movies such as 1956's High Society.
Night and day, you are the one. Only
though Sinatra was exempted from military service in World War II because of a perforated eardrum, he helped the war effort with his appearances in movies and benefits for soldiers. He was an outspoken supporter of Franklin D. Roosevelt and liberal viewpoints, including racial and religious tolerance. His charitable appearances were consistent and numerous.
Sinatra, he did not like segregation. He didn't like that black people were treated as creatures of inferiority. He always rebelled against that.
Fabulous flight. It was a trip to the moon.
I really became conscious of segregation when I got involved in the entertainment business. I found that going through parts of the United States, traveling constantly and doing one-nighters with orchestras that were comprised of Negro musicians, there were a lot of problems, and not only the South, but in some quarters in the border states. And I began to resent it. I think it's vile. I think it's the most indecent way to believe. I think that we're all created equal. It's wrong. It's basically wrong.
Sinatra felt that important to his life and to his art and to his whole style was what he had learned from black culture and black people. He was very, very close to the African-American scene. His closeness was never really fully recognized historically because he did that quietly behind the scenes.
He opened up more doors than any other individual, black or white, in this business for me. He set my motion picture salary. He also was there for me on a personal basis when I needed him. And without being asked, he was always there for me.
Sinatra's first and only major downfall in the public eye came in 1951 and lasted for almost 3 years. His extramarital affairs led to his divorce and his subsequent well-publicized tempestuous marriage to actress Ava Gardner, also ended in divorce in 1957. Rumors of his mafia connections spread, mostly from his socializing with alleged mafia kingpins. And these rumors persisted, along with publicity about his noted barroom brawls.
To dream really do come true. Someday I'll wish upon a star and wake up where the clouds are far behind me.
Evidence we uncovered in the United States, as well as in churches in Sicily, and the work of a professional genealogist, established that Sinatra's family came from the same small village in Sicily as Lucky Luciano. Luciano's family and Sinatra's family lived on the same small street at the same time. They were buried in the same churchyard. They were baptized in the same church in the same font.
Yet Sinatra always blurred his family's origins.
Almost certainly he did so deliberately to obscure the fact that his family had come from the same village in Sicily as Lucky Luciano.
Separately, the Lucianos and the Sinatras arrived in America. The Lucianos made for Manhattan. The Sinatras for New Jersey, across the Hudson River. Hoboken wasn't exactly glamorous, but nor was it the worst place to wind up in America.
Musical tastes were changing as well, as belters like Eddie Fisher and Frankie Lane were replacing the crooners in popularity. All these events, in addition to his failure to serve in the military, combined to alienate him from an adoring but fickle public, and especially from the press.
I heard she sang a good song. I heard she had a style. And so I came to see her.
Columbia Pictures had turned Sinatra down for a part in an epic movie they were planning about World War II.
He knew that that part would make him.
So it seems, Rosselli took decisive action.
Frank convinced John that this would revive his career, which would be good for Chicago and the mob and everything else.
The mafia wielded power in Hollywood. They held film unions in their grip. Rosselli asked for a meeting with Harry Cohn, the head of Columbia Pictures.
And he just told Harry Cohn, you don't have a choice. Frank's going in the picture and that's it. And that's the way it worked out.
And Rosselli told you this himself?
Yes, he did.
Before his death, Fred Zinnemann, the film's director, told me the story wasn't true, but he may not have known. Cohn's widow confirmed it. Other evidence, too, supports the story that Rosselli told.
Cohn was afraid of him.
Oh, yeah.
Afraid of Johnny.
Well, afraid of his power.
Yeah. To shut everything down.
Easy. He could have done it very easily.
The allegations of underworld activity were never proven, and no indictments were ever made.
I've got you
under my skin. I've got you deep in the heart of me.
His comeback was secured with his appearance as the feisty Italian-American soldier, Angelo Maggio, in the critically acclaimed film From Here to Eternity in 1954. The role won him an Academy Award for Best Supporting Actor, and he was back on the recording charts as well with Young at Heart. Nelson Riddle, his arranger in the 1950s, helped Sinatra stay on the competitive record charts throughout the rest of the decade. In fact, Sinatra stayed on the charts steadily from 1967, despite the sudden and overwhelming preeminence of rock and roll music. This durability was due in part to the advent of the long-playing album, the LP, upon which Sinatra could surround a central theme with a large collection of songs or ballads. From 1957 through 1966, he had 27 top 10 albums without producing one top 10 single. These albums were led by Only the Lonely in 1958, Come Fly With Me in 1958, and Come Dance With Me in 1959. The Bobby Soxers, his fans from the past, were now adults, but Sinatra had shifted smoothly to the role of the aging romantic bachelor. This was signified by the image of him leaning alone against a lamppost, raincoat in hand. His movie appearances multiplied during this period, with 9 in the span of just 2 years, including Guys and Dolls, 1955, Young at Heart, 1955, The Tender Trap, 1955, The Man with the Golden Arm, 1955, and High Society in 1956. Having first visited the White House in 1944 while campaigning for Franklin D. Roosevelt, in his bid for a fourth term in office, Sinatra worked eagerly for John F. Kennedy's election in 1960 and later supervised JFK's inaugural gala in Washington. The relationship between the two soured, however, after the president canceled a weekend visit to Sinatra's house due to the singer's connections to Chicago mob boss Sam Giancana.
You never can win. Why not use your mentality? Step up, wake up to reality.
Sinatra was an ardent supporter of the Democratic Party, most notably John F. Kennedy. It's unknown how the two officially met, but Kennedy's sister Pat was married to Sinatra's fellow Rat Packer Peter Lawford. Kennedy appreciated Sinatra's glamour and rule-breaking attitude, and Sinatra greatly admired the power that Kennedy represented. When JFK announced his bid for the presidency, Sinatra publicly endorsed his candidacy and avidly used his star power to generate votes. He organized donor dinners, appeared in political radio ads, and lent Kennedy aides his private jet. His hit song High Hopes even became the theme song of the Kennedy campaign. It has been speculated that JFK's father, Joseph Kennedy, was hoping to use Sinatra's mob connections and union ties to bring in the votes. However, the Kennedy-Sinatra friendship crumbled shortly after the election, when an FBI wiretap revealed that Sinatra was having an affair with JFK's married sister, Pat. Sinatra made it clear on the recordings that he was only using Pat to influence her brothers and steer the government away from his gangster friend's activities, but the Kennedys agreed that Sinatra had to go.
Come fly with me, let's fly away. If you can use some exotic booze, there's a bar in far Bombay.
By the 1970s, Sinatra had abandoned his long-held Democratic loyalties and embraced the Republican Party, supporting first Richard Nixon and later close friend Ronald Reagan, who presented Sinatra with the Presidential Medal of Freedom, the nation's highest civilian award, in 1985.
Come fly with me, let's take off in the blue. Once I get you up there,
His music came to be known as middle of the road, but his ever-present style put him in a class by himself because of his ability to convey the heartfelt romantic message. Additional hits of the 1960s include It Was a Very Good Year from his Grammy Award-winning album, September of My Years, 1965, and Strangers in the Night in 1966. He did reach the top of the singles charts in a duet with his daughter, Nancy, Something Stupid, in 1967. A brief marriage to 20-year-old actress Mia Farrow ended in divorce in 1968. He continued his movie roles, including Tony Rome, 1967, and Robin and the Seven Hoods, 1964, but they had declined in artistic merit. Critics saw these movies as a vehicle for reinforcement of his tough guy image, as well as his and his friends' answer to the great youth movement that was taking place around them. These friends included entertainers Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr., Joey Bishop, and Peter Lawford, a clique that came to be known as the Rat Pack.
There's a gangster sleeping upstairs. Easy.
Quiet, Sam. Subtlety, baby.
All right, sweet cake. Oh, my goodness gracious.
No. The guy in the back can't hear you. Go ahead, a little more, baby. Loosen up.
Hey. Hey. You may be my leader, but I'm gonna punch you right in your mouth.
I gotta catch a train sooner, yeah.
What are you complaining about? I gotta go to a bar mitzvah in a minute.
After his famous recording of My Way in 1969, Sinatra made an ill-fated attempt to sing some of the lighter tunes of his modern rock composers. This led to a brief retirement from entertainment in 1971 through 1973, a time that was accompanied by a shift in his politics from liberal to conservative. He had become a close friend of Ronald Reagan's and helped Reagan in his later successful presidential campaigns. By this time, Sinatra's financial empire produced millions of dollars in earnings from investments in films, records, gambling casinos, real estate, missile parts, and general aviation. He came out of retirement in 1974 with a renewed interest in the middle-of-the-road genre and older tunes. He was married for the fourth time in 1976 to Barbara Blakely. His return to the limelight was highlighted by his famous recording of New York, New York in 1980 as he entered his sixth decade of entertaining.
In the final years of Frank Sinatra's life, he often found himself reminiscing about his many loves. One of the relationships that affected him the most was with Marilyn Monroe. While the circumstances surrounding Monroe's fateful death remain somewhat mysterious, Sinatra's close friend and former road manager, Tony Appedisano, recalls how Frank believed she was murdered. According to him, Sinatra never fully recovered from her death either. Appedisano claims that while Sinatra and Monroe were very close, they weren't lovers, as some have speculated. Sinatra found Monroe charming, beautiful, and funny, but he also recognized she was deeply troubled, fragile, and vulnerable. He couldn't just sleep with her and walk away as some people could. He was far too much of a gentleman for that kind of thing. Even though they weren't intimately involved, Monroe did confide all her deepest, darkest secrets with Old Blue Eyes. She shared with him things like the scandalous details of her affairs with John F. Kennedy and Robert F. Kennedy, for starters. When those affairs abruptly ended, Marilyn disclosed to Frank that she didn't understand why they cut her out of their lives so completely once she stopped sleeping with them.
Mima goes walking, and when she passes, I smile, but she doesn't see.
Por causa do amor, she just... In 1988, Sinatra joined with Sammy Davis Jr. and Dean Martin and embarked on a cross-country tour. The tour lasted only 1 week. Sinatra later organized another reunion tour with Shirley MacLaine in 1992, and it was a resounding success. By 1994, Sinatra was experiencing memory lapses, but that did not keep him from performing publicly. He merely added the use of a teleprompter to remind him of the lyrics. After celebrating his 80th birthday at a public tribute and roast at a Los Angeles Shrine Auditorium, new collector's packages of recordings were released and became instant bestsellers. The legions who grew up with him and his music were complemented by adoration from younger generations, all of whom have made Old Blue Eyes the preeminent popular singer of the 20th century.
Frank Sinatra taught me so many things in the years that I toured with him, but I'll never forget a story he told me one time about our business, show business. He said, there was a time, he said, Tommy, I was the hottest thing in the country. I was the hottest. I could pick up the phone. There wasn't one manager, one agent, one recording studio that wouldn't take my call. He said, I could call the White House and the President of the United States took my call. That's how hot I was. And then I got cold. And I got really cold. And a few years went by, I couldn't get anybody to take my call. He said, recording companies, managers, agents, no one took my call. He said, then I got hot again, really hot. He said, now I'd go to a party and I'd look across the room and there's that agent that wouldn't take my call, or that recording company wouldn't take my call, and I'd look at them and they'd put their head down. He said, but what they didn't understand is that I understood. It's show business. That's two words, show and business. I couldn't do business for them. And that's why they didn't take my call. He said, my fault was, I thought we were friends. And lesson I never forgot. He said, you know, I thought we were friends. He said, that's my mistake, not theirs. It's a business here.
And now the end is near, and so I face the final curtain.
In 1994, Sinatra performed his final public concert and was awarded the Legend Award at the 1994 Grammys. He made no further public appearances after suffering a heart attack in January 1997. On May 14, 1998, Sinatra died at the age of 82 in Los Angeles. Sinatra sold over 250 million records worldwide, received 11 Grammy Awards, and starred in 60 motion pictures during his career of 7 decades. His influence on the music business remains undiminished as his records continue to sell. Many of the films in which he appeared are considered classics, and a number have been remade. The Rat Pack and his songs, such as My Way, are still fused into cultural fabric of the United States. He lived a full life, about which countless books have been written. Mention his name today, and he is still remembered as Old Blue Eyes, a soulful crooner who certainly lived life his way.
And more, much more than this, I did it my way.
How would you like to be remembered?
Well, I think I would like to be remembered as a man who brought an innovation to popular singing, a peculiar, unique fashion that I wish one of these days somebody would learn to do so it doesn't die where it is. I would like to be remembered as a man who had a wonderful time living his life, and who had good friends, fine family, and I don't think I could ask for anything more than that, actually.
His story produced and packaged by Larry Shorby.